It's about 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 11th, 2015. We'll begin today's reading with Tools. Dentist students get new school tools. Students at Dentist School are already very comfortable with technology, but this year each student will have a device of his or her own to use. The TechQuest event at the school on Thursday introduced children and parents to the one-to-one rollout that will begin shortly. Assistant Principal Michelle Bonebreak said that elementary students will have iPads, while middle school students will have MacBooks. It's not going to be just a lab where they get pulled from class and they come down to the lab, she said. It'll be an interactive tool that they're going to be able to use in every class. At TechQuest, the students and parents were given a driving question, which is how students at Dentist learn. They have a problem to solve, and it's up to the students to figure out how to solve it, with minimal guidance from the teacher. The driving question was, how does the integration of technology impact your students' learning at Dentist Lab School? Tech stations were set up around the building, and parents and kids could choose education apps to use in answering that question, working together the same way students do in class. Special education teacher Laura Turner said that some of her students were not comfortable with giving presentations in class, but can use technology to create graphs and videos to show that what they've learned, while middle school teacher Stephen Callahan said that he directs students to take videos of themselves working on a math problem in small groups, for example, and then he can watch the videos later and determine which students need extra help. We can't work with every student individually every day, he said, but I can watch the videos at night and see who's getting it and who needs more help, and that lets me know which students to meet with the next day. A lot of what we're doing tonight is what happens when we give the student an essential question to guide them in the path that they take to find the answer to that question, said Kista Corrigan, the instructional technology coach. There isn't always just one answer, she said. Millikan is a campus in motion. Greater transferability of classes with Richland Community College tops the list of what's new at Millikan University for the 2015-16 academic school year. Provost Jeff Aber said the agreement causes earning an associate's degree at Richland to make more sense for students transferring to Millikan and opens the door to new bachelor's degrees such as one under development in arts technology. Richland already teaches the electronics courses that would be needed, Aper said. We should be ready to go with the new major by the fall of 2016. The provost added that he hopes to deepen Millikan's partnership with Decatur Public Schools beyond Dentist School so that the university assists even more teachers with professional development while receiving performance learning opportunities for its education majors. Dean of Admission Kevin McIntyre is a new face on campus after starting work on July 1st, replacing the retiring Lynn Stoner. Formerly Vice President of Enrollment Management at Rosemont College in Pennsylvania, McIntyre said he missed working directly with potential students and their families, something he hasn't done since leaving a job as Dean of Enrollment Management at Immaculata University more than 10 years ago. He has an MBA from Goldie Beacom College in Wilmington, Delaware, and he and his wife Kathleen are moving to Decatur from Wilmington. Promotions at Millikan include Christy Margolis to direct the School of Education, Hee-Young Koi to the director of the English Language Center, and Julianne Shields, director of the Center for Entrepreneurship in the Tabor School of Business. Shields replaces Sharon Alpe, who retired from Millikan after 25 years on the Tabor faculty and after founding and running the Center for Entrepreneurship since 1998. With the wrap-up of the Transform MU Capital campaign approaching December 31st and the $85 million goal already exceeded, physical changes to campus are continuing. A rival court outside Richard's Treat University Center was revamped this summer. Historic Aston Hall, along with Dolson, Blackburn, and Weck Halls, opened to non-commuting freshmen in August after undergoing $2 million in upgrades. A residence hall for women since it was completed in 1907, Aston was returned to service for its first time in 8 years as a men's dormitory to prepare for demolitions, first of Mills Hall, which has already begun, and then Hessler Hall. Ruby Brace, Vice President of Finance and Business Affairs, said demolition of the aging building should open up the views of campus along Oakland Avenue, while the residence hall improvements, which included new flooring in all four halls, give the freshman living space a fresh new look. Less visible, but also important to student comfort, are $1 million in improvements to be made to the heating and cooling systems at the Lady Tabor Science Center. Ameren has contributed $157,000 in incentives. Benefits should include $100,000 savings in annual energy costs and steadier temperature control throughout the building, said Ken Jordan, Millikan's Director of Facility Services. He said the goal is to have the work complete by January 31, 2016. Speaking of the new year, the Staley Library will move into temporary quarters inside new halls 3 and 4 over the holiday break, so ground can be broken by spring on a project to transform the building into a university commons that will blend library and student center functions. It will also be home to the Doug Oberhelman Center for Leadership, Apper said, which will consolidate three leadership programs at Millikan: a leadership academy in the Tabor School of Business, a major in organizational leadership under the College of Arts and Sciences, and leadership track under Student Life. Plans are for the University Commons to open and begin providing student dining services in the fall of 2017. Real Encounter carries faith message with high-flying stunts. Stephen Decatur Middle School 8th grader Jamie Eastwood was entertained by the national stuntman Real Encounter, but I didn't get scared, she said. That is just fine with the action sport stunt team. Entertainment is only part of the show. Real Encounter is a ministry of professional stunt racers who perform acrobatic moves on street bikes, BMX, and motocross bikes. The ministry stunts provided an opportunity to appear on season 9 of NBC's America's Got Talent. Flying through the air on a bike may be fun, but that isn't what is important to the 7-person team. We are ministers first, said Brad Bennett, a motorcycle stunt rider. Then we use our talents and gifts for the ministry. Real Encounter catches the attention of the audience and then relates its stunts to everyday life. We want to bring a good message that's going to impact people's lives, Bennett said. Without the gospel component, all we would be is a show team. There's not much fulfillment in that. Wednesday morning, the group traveled to three area middle schools for 45-minute assemblies. Their message was character-based, speaking of the disciplines of a professional athlete and the connection with real life. For the assemblies, the group focused on teens and preteens. We make the best connection with middle or high school, Bennett said. That's just the way we are wired. The way we come across with our message, it really hits that age better. The junior high assemblies were a teaser for the larger family show Wednesday evening at Decatur's First Christian Church. The group performed more daring feats, flying approximately 15 feet in the air on various bikes. We do front flips, back flips, burnouts, front nose wheels, Bennett said, stunts just like what you would see on the X Games. The church invited the public to the event because of the message. They really do a good job at tying their job of BMX into life principles, said Josh Kinnan, youth pastor. The church staff was just as impressed with the stunts and jokes. This is the coolest thing ever, said Thomas Hagen, pastoral intern, and the junior high students responded really well. According to Bennett, Motocross is deemed to be one of the most physically demanding sports in the world. The top 50 athletes in the sport train extensively. They're considered to be in the best shape possible. You've got to make sure you put the right stuff in to get the right results, he said. If we constantly put garbage in, that's what's going to come out. The group relates these practices to not only the physical body, but also the impact on others. You have the potential of making an extreme impact in life, Bennett said. You can make a positive difference in other people's lives. BMX racer Joe West continued, the connection to life and the challenges we all face. Before each race, the obstacles West would compete on were placed in different locations. You really never knew what to expect, he said. If you are running around aimlessly, you aren't going to do well, and you have the potential of getting hurt. Eighth grader Keegan Mahon understood the connections. Stay away from bad things, he said. What you take in, you're going to take out. But the event also had another positive impact on him. It was the most spectacular thing I've ever seen, he said. Official students rally for MAP grants. Emma Wilisco, the youngest of three children raised by a widow living on disability, grew up thinking college was not in her future. But now that she's a junior at Millikan University and less than 2 years away from graduation, she's unwilling to let go of her dream of becoming an elementary music teacher. The Bourbonnais native was among the speakers at a Thursday morning news conference organized by Illinois Treasurer Michael Frericks to urge Governor Bruce Rauner and the General Assembly to approve tuition assistance under the Monetary Award Program known as MAP Grants. Frericks began the campaign August 31st and on Thursday visited campuses represented by State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat of Bunker Hill, stopping at Millikan's Richard Treat University Center in Decatur in the morning and Blackburn College in Carlinville in the afternoon. This may be a piecemeal approach to the state's budget impasse, but this particular piece is important, Frerich said. We, state office holders, can be held hostage, but students on our campuses who have demonstrated financial need should not be. Millikan President Patrick White said the university has about 730 students who are depending on $3.4 million in MAP grants for the 2015-16 school year, but that this amount is only a fraction of the financial aid provided to Millikan students. People sometimes assume students who attend private higher education have more family resources than students who attend state universities, White said. This is absolutely not true. Also with Frericks and Menar in Decatur was State Representative Sue Sheard, Democrat of Decatur, who grew emotional talking about the MAP grant she received to attend Illinois State University, where the bachelor's degree she earned led to 34 years of teaching in Decatur and Maroa Forsyth Public Schools. Do you have to be rich to go to college or follow your dream? Is that how it is in Illinois? Sheer asked in a loud voice. I don't think so. Wilisco, 20, doesn't think so either. One of my brother's friends told me about the music program at Millikan, and my mom, who has multiple sclerosis, did everything she had to do to help me get here, Wilisco. Well, Isco said. I know many people like me wouldn't be able to follow their dream without MAP grants, and I don't think that's fair, she said. Students thank first responders for courage. Parsons schoolteacher Anthony Mansur remembers every detail of 9/11. I was a freshman in high school, and I was in my weightlifting class, he said Tuesday, while his fifth graders were working on thank you notes to firefighters. Our teacher called us into his office, about 30 of us, and we just stood there watching on this little TV on his desk. Parsons secretary Debbie McInerney is friends with Ian Owens, who organizes the annual Cruise 11 event that will be 2:30 p.m. Sunday, September 13th in Central Park. That event began as a way to remember 9/11 and to recognize local veterans and first responders. Children in Decatur schools write thank you notes to police, firefighters, emergency medical technicians, and veterans as part of the event. The public is also encouraged to write notes and can drop them off this week at Fleet Feet, 1090 West Wood Street, or bring them to the event Sunday. Writing teacher Christy Mullenix demonstrated how to write a thank you note, and as she did, she also told them about 9/11 and the courage of the first responders. As people were running out of those buildings, they were running in, she said. She chose a few of the less harrowing photos to show the children, of firefighters carrying people or helping them walk, everyone coated with the dirt and debris from the collapsing twin towers. Some of the photos showed police and firefighters slumped, head in hands, overcome by the horror. They saw things we were never meant to see, Mullenix said. But they didn't quit. They wanted to keep helping. The students took their tasks seriously, and every head bent over a card to write thank you notes. I said thank you for risking your life. Thank you for keeping everybody safe, said Caden Ginger, who filled up the inside of his card with his message. They're the heroes of Decatur, he added, and they keep saving people every day, and they've been risking their lives for a long time. I think it's a good idea to write to them and say thank you for all your help, said Nakira Chandler. The class began a unit on Tuesday studying 9/11, Mansur said, though he will filter what he tells them and doesn't plan to show them upsetting photos. To these children who were born after it happened, the event is history, and he wants them to understand, in an age-appropriate way, how significant it was. It's really hard for them to realize how serious it was, he said. It's a topic you have to walk on eggshells with because it's so kind of foreign to them, he said. Park City residents air concerns to city. Park City mobile home community residents offered frank, passionate opinions about their neighborhood and about the city Thursday. They praised the strong community spirit and well-organized events of the mobile home park, but worried about possible drug trafficking and even gang activity encroaching on the neighborhood. You know they're involving our young children. That needs to stop, said Carol Lawrence, president of the Park City Neighborhood Organization. Decatur City Council members and city staff representatives met in the park's community building to hear the concerns as part of the city's series of neighborhood gatherings. Residents asked about the possibility of more police patrols. Sergeant Brian Earls said that the request was a common one throughout the city, but resources are limited. Reporting requirements and other factors mean that each call for service takes longer than it used to. The problem is it's a numbers game, Earls said. They're just going from call to call to call, particularly on the second shift from 3 to 11 p.m. Deborah Roper said that since she started as community manager 3 weeks ago, she has noticed that the mobile home park is its own community. She worries, though, about a possible increase in crime. Roper praised the city as a whole. Decatur has more people working together to make it a better place to live than almost anywhere I've been, and I've lived in 5 states. Almost 70 families remain from those who moved RVs into the community this summer to work on Enbridge's Southern Access Extension crude oil pipeline. Lawrence said that they've been good neighbors who watch out for others and contribute to the local economy. Some enjoyed it so much they want to come back to Decatur for vacations. You have to be able to talk good about your neighborhood and your city to get them to want to be here, she said. Fido Scurry features Run, Walk, Blessing costume contest. The 15th annual Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation's Fido Scurry will be held from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Saturday, September 12th, at the Fairview Park Pavilion No. 1. A 5K and 1 mile run or walk will be held. The cost for the run is $25 per person, which includes a T-shirt and bandana. The entry fee for the walk is $10 per person or $20 per family, which includes one bandana. Additional t-shirts and bandanas may be purchased for $15 per t-shirt or $5 per bandana. The proceeds will help furnish care for homeless and stray animals at the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center. The development of Fido Fields Dog Parks in Fairview Park and Fido Fields East Dog Park in Nelson Park will also benefit. Registration forms may be picked up at any veterinarian's office, the Decatur Indoor Sports Center, Dale's South Lake Pharmacy, and Millie and Bo's Dog Barkery. Registration for Fido Scurry is also available in the park the day of the event. Registration and t-shirt pickup will begin at 8 a.m. While an ecumenical blessing of the animals by Father Joe Malloy of Holy Family Parish will take place at 8:30 a.m. A pet parade and costume contest will begin at 8:40 a.m., and prizes for the best costumes will be awarded in categories, including the most original, most feminine or masculine, costume most fitting the theme, owner and pet costumed most alike. For more information, call 423-PETS. That's 423-7387, or PETS. Amanda Ware custody defense postponed. Chicago. Attorneys for Amanda Ware won't begin their case until October 1st as lawyers Thursday sparred over medical records of the former Clinton woman who is fighting to regain custody of her children. Ware, known as Amanda Hamm in 2003, when her car went into Clinton Lake with her three children inside and her husband, Leo Ware, are involved in a dispute with the state over her children born since the drownings. Two girls, ages 5 and 3, and their 18-month-old brother were removed in 2014. Defense lawyers Stephen Dorr and Lisa Dedman argued Thursday that Amanda Ware's medical records from two psychiatric hospitalizations were not properly submitted as evidence. Associate Judge Demetrios Koutaras ordered the Cook County State's Attorney's Office to obtain new copies of records from Madden Mental Health Center in Maywood, where Ware was treated as a teenager, and from St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur, where she received care in September 2003 after her children died. "It is critical that I maintain the integrity of these documents," Koutaras said. The state used Ware's mental health history in its case last week, arguing that Ware's alleged plot to kill her children 12 years ago began with a threat in 1995 to drive into a lake. The Decatur records were referred to in testimony from retired Illinois State Police investigator Ben Halloran, who said Ware made incriminating statements to police during an interview at the psychiatric unit. Missing from Thursday's hearing was Ann Dannison, Amanda Ware's mother, one of six witnesses the defense said it planned to call. The Cook County guardian appointed for the children also will testify before the case moves to a hearing, where the judge will hear opinions from lawyers on whether the children should return home. The bulk of evidence from the state centers on the 2003 deaths, for which Ware was convicted of child endangerment, and her former boyfriend, Maurice Legrone, was convicted for murder. Cook County prosecutors also have presented evidence of past drug use by the Wares. The two police calls in the past three years to the Ware home involving allegations of domestic violence. A September 30th hearing will be held on the state's request to unseal full details of Leo Ware's criminal record. Shelbyville Council okays increase to water service. Shelbyville. Customers in Shelbyville will be paying more for water service beginning in November after the Shelbyville City Council approved an increase. The base rate for water service will rise from $12.25 per 2,000 gallons to $13 per 2,000. The price for increments of more than 2,000 gallons will rise from $2.60 per 1,000 gallons to $2.75. Finance Commissioner Bill Shoaf said that the increase was necessary to help pay for repairs to the city water and sewer systems. "We don't like it, but it's something we have to do," Shoaf said. In addition to the monthly increase, in January the city will add a $2 a month meter surcharge to bills. Shoaf said that those funds would be used to replace Shelbyville's aging water meter system. "We are hoping to be able to go to an electronic water meter with automated reading," he said. "That would do away with the two-month delay in bills we currently have and identify leaks both for the city and on the customer's side much sooner." Councilmember Tom Schaefer said that the current water meters are less than 100% effective in calculating water use. "Even at 90%, that is still thousands of gallons of water not being accounted for," he said. The new meters would pay for themselves over the lifetime of the meter, plus provide improved service, he said. Cogan's connections to students strong. William Cogan, Bill to his friends, was an animal lover whose rescue dogs were included in his obituary, a musician, an educator remembered fondly by students and colleagues, a husband, a dad, and a grandfather. He passed away September 8th at the age of 87. He retired from Decatur Schools in 1997 after serving the longest tenure as principal in Dennis school history, from 1971 to retirement. He was at that time the most senior administrator in the district and the unofficial historian. "He was my mentor and teacher and taught me how to be a better father, professional and man," said Barry A. Butts, who married Cogan in 2014. They were together 31 years. "He was the most giving and caring man and a true credit to Decatur Public Schools and the community. He will be missed by so many." Matt Andrews, principal at Dennis School, who was a student there while Cogan was principal, said he models his administrative style on Cogan's. "I remember the relationships with students," Andrews said. "He was an omnipresent, always there. He'd have fun with the kids, and they'd really looked up to him. He was kind of an inspiration to me as an administrator. What with that whole relationship piece and getting in there and getting to show students on an individual level." Mike Soderoff, director of Buildings and Grounds, occasionally met with Cogan to discuss needs at Dennis and said he was always impressed that Cogan knew every child by name. From the students' reactions, it was very obvious they knew how deeply their principal cared for them, he said. Dennis teacher Sue Phillips also attended Dennis as a child and remembers Cogan both from her time as a student and when her daughter Katie was a student at the school toward the end of Cogan's career. "I remember he was very friendly and always made me feel good," she said. "I felt welcome. He was very loving, very caring, and he ran a tight ship. The kids really respected him. When she was a student there, everyone went home for lunch, and Cogan was always at the schoolhouse door to welcome students back for afternoon classes with a smile," she said. "He's part of the reason she became a teacher, and why her daughter did too," she said. "Cogan had high expectations for his staff," said Linda Burnham, who has worked at Dennis since Cogan hired her in 1988, and whose expectations inspired them to do their best, and he was generous with his praise. Memorials can be made to Homebound Pet Shelter in keeping with Cogan's interest in animal rescue. Services will be at 11 a.m. today in Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, with visitation an hour before services. Cogan is survived by Butts, 5 children, 11 grandchildren, and 9 great-grandchildren. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 11th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.